Do you want to do an intro for that, or shall we just go straight into it?
I think it's. I mean, either way, like, yeah, I don't mind. Okay. Yeah,
let's go with it.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah, you know, my standards for CoinMetric are a little higher than they used to be, and as I said, I've seen a lot of things in CoinMetric that I've wanted to improve on. And that's my own personal lens and opinion on it, that I felt like a lot that was out there, actually, there's a lot of room for improvement. So a lot of what's out there is not exactly what I would recommend for beginners. I think Bobo's is good, but I think a lot of those moves aren't completely natural, and which is why I actually, my homage project was even like taking a lot of these moves that I initially thought were unnatural and how I made them more natural. Also was pulling stuff from Bobo's. But let's see. You know what was one that I really liked was Metal One by Eric Jones. I thought was actually a really good one for people getting started. And really not to toot my own horn, because I actually do think it's a really good resource for learning stuff is, you know, the homage package deal that I was talking about, the extras that are on there, the drills and exercises, I think are really helpful. And I think it's so important to understand angles from the beginning. So, and what I'm teaching about angles in that package deal is actually from Eric Jones's, It's me expounding even further, actually, on Eric Jones's, what was it? It was like an essay he wrote called Spectatorial Triangulation, and is just a great way to understand angles. But yeah, other than that, you know, once you have the foundations down and you're able to transition between palms, there's so much, like, I love Kaino Harbottle. His work is great, especially for Downs palm type stuff. And when you're standing and you're doing that kind of work and the hands look really open, that's wonderful. Michael Rubenstein's brand new book called Rubenstein Magic, Rubenstein Coin Magic, has some great stuff in it, actually. I liked that one a lot. And that one's very new, and it's a big book that I think could very well be beneficial for beginners. But yeah, I don't know. I can't really think of anything else immediately.
No, I think that's good. People have got more than enough places to start with. One thing I'd love to ask you is, right now you're pretty on top of the game, as far as I'm concerned. But are there people that you still kind of look up to in terms of you're still reaching, or at least they kind of inspire you when you see that work?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So I talked about Eric Mead earlier in the podcast. Eric did a 3-coin vanish at a convention that fried me in a huge way. It blew. I don't even know how to talk about it. I'm just going to, I would stumble upon my own words if I even tried. But when I asked him afterwards, I said, what'd you do? What were those vanishes? He's like, I used really basic sleights. I was like, what? And then I got in a very short conversation with him where he basically just told me, he says, you need to understand tension and relaxation. And that was it. He didn't really say much more to me other than that. Yeah. I was hoping he'd teach me, but he's a little, I don't know, he's slightly cold with me. But I appreciated even that, because I went and started studying a lot more tension and relaxation. And it's really important to understand that. I know it's something that a lot of magicians have talked about, and people go, oh, yeah, tension and relaxation. And people go, oh, let's get back to the moves.
Right.
Now, tension and relaxation is where the real magic happens. It really is. It's what makes something seem impossible. It's what makes it so that you miss a move even happened. You were like, no, wait, I swore that coin was there, and now it's gone. And you go, when was there even a move? That's really magical, and you can even fry a magician with that. And you know, Slidini taught a lot on tension and relaxation, and it was a great resource for that. And I feel like I'm always working on making that even smoother, because some of those guys were masters at it, and Slidini was a master at tension and relaxation. Sometimes I watch videos of him doing koi magic, and it fries me, and I go back and I burn the screen as hard as I can, and eventually I'll catch it and go, oh my god, that's so simple. It wasn't even anything complicated. It was just he used the timing and the pacing and the tension and relaxation of his body in a way that was so beautifully misdirecting. Mm-hmm. So that's one that I'm always aspiring to. Another avenue is people like, so Mario Lopez is somebody who invokes this kind of playful wonder throughout his performance that you just feel seduced into it. You're not even concerned with method anymore because he's just so fun to imagine with. He just embodies this character that is imagining in this way that you want to imagine because he makes it look so fun. Mm-hmm. And that's something I've been trying to add more and more of into my work. And some of you guys might have even seen a leap in my work at some point, and it was because of Mario.
And Mario was, he was on Foolish recently, wasn't he?
Yeah, he did the nipple trick. Yeah, Mario showed that to me at the... Huh? Yeah, fooled them, yeah. He showed that to me at a Carolina close-up convention. Sorry, it's now called the Tricks Convention in North Carolina, just last year. And I was doing it a lot until the Fool Us thing, because he showed me that trick, and I was... It was my most requested trick. Anytime I go out, people go, pull off your nipple. And I was making it into a coin thing too. I'd pull it off and it would turn into a coin and I'd throw it back on. So yeah, that trick fries people. They love it. And then he did it on Fool Us and it was great. It's not his. He told me he learned it from one of his friends who is the original creator of it. But I, unfortunately for life, me can't remember that person's name.
Do you yourself ever think about making an appearance on Fool Us, or is it kind of outside of your... Because there are some people who seem like it's just not the kind of thing they'd want to do, even though they could definitely go on and do some great stuff on there. And but then as well, like years, more and more people have gone on that I've thought, well, oh, I didn't think that kind of... I never saw that person going on.
In some ways, I'm surprised Mario did it, honestly, because of my understanding of his philosophy on magic for... through my conversations with him, that like, it's really not about see if you can catch me, you know? And that kind of competitive aspect that comes out, especially in America and American magicians, it's a lot less in like, and you know, probably lots of Europe too even, but the Spanish magicians have this style that is so playful, and it's not this, aha, I gotcha. Kind of mindset. It's never invoking something kind of competitive.
Well, because that's the thing is, like, not to jump too deep into this, but it's like the American, just how the whole, even the education system, it's like you can get 100% on your quiz, like which is not a thing in Europe or England. I don't know, like, for instance, if you can't, nobody gets 100% on their English test. You just don't, like, it doesn't happen. It's like, and I think that's what's interesting, you have this difference in the US where you all sit at separate tables, and just, and I'm just talking about the education system here, speaking from like most students that go, it's like you can get 100% and you can win and you will win, and like, and I think it's interesting you see the difference in how that plays into your psychology as a magician, and it's, I think it's an interesting point that you bring up, because like you were saying, you see in the Spanish culture a real difference in the way of, you know, like you were saying, it's playful and it's fun, and it's not so much like I'm gonna do this insane effect and like try and catch me out, and because I bet you can't, like, and I'm not trying to like paint all magicians in the US of doing that, but I just think it's an interesting point that you bring up, that you can see that it's interesting to see how much your culture can kind of branch into your performance style.
And yeah, I mean, Spain must have something going for it then, because that's where a lot of the greats are. So
actually, I don't know if you're here, Danny, but I think you might be muted, or you're just waiting.
Okay, can you hear me again?
Yeah, sorry,
I'll let the screen time out. Yeah, and that's a really good point. I mean, and that was the thing, is like what I was talking about earlier, that challenging competitive mindset that invokes rational mind in the spectator, and the rational mind is not conducive to the suspension of disbelief. It's necessary to have it there so that you have something to kind of pull that's like the rug that you pull out from underneath them. So you need that there. But at the same time, if they're grasping at that so hard that they can't then enjoy the state of wonder, if they jump back to that rationalizing, they don't really experience that state of magic, right? Mm-hmm. It's like that person who comes up to you after the show and goes, okay, I think I know what you did there when you did this thingy, you know, like that guy. And you're just like, oh man, you missed it. Like, you know, and
you must feel bad.
I know. I feel really bad for them when that happens. And then just like, oh, you have a hard time really enjoying. And especially when I've learned how to structure my show in a way where I've reduced that so much, there are still some people that still do that. It's just programmed in them. They mm-hmm. can't let go enough to not know something. But to bring it back to the topic on fool us, is it's framed in that way. It's try to fool me. So then what is the audience thinking? The audience is watching from this place of, can I figure this out? Mm-hmm. You know, and so that in a way is something I'm not interested in. The other part of me was like, oh, it'd be cool to get on and like show my work. And sure, there's the plus side of making yourself more known, and then people can find your work and maybe you sell more products and maybe you make more money or whatever. But I don't know. That's not as valuable as offering good magic in a context mm-hmm. where I feel like it can be enjoyed properly. Mm-hmm. And like I said, I was shocked Mario did it. But Mario is so good at invoking that state of imagination that I think even in that context, he succeeds, mm-hmm. you know?
They have such a wide reach that, I don't know, it gives you a chance for people that would never normally watch your stuff. It's like you get a chance to, like you're saying, invoke that reaction in them and give them a sort of playfulness. And I think people that are watching it would appreciate that. So I guess there's this side, both sides to the coin. But that makes sense what you're saying. I totally get that.
Mm-hmm. And part of me thinks like, oh, it would be great. And especially if I framed it, like I could totally frame from the beginning. Hey guys, I'm not here to fool you. Mm-hmm. I want you to imagine with me. Mm-hmm. And that's not about rationalizing and figuring out. That's about enjoying. But feel free to rationalize if you want. You know, if you frame like that, then you could reframe it right before your show and offer something that people could enjoy. Or you can just be that playful, imaginative thing to such a degree that they have no choice, like Mario did. And in that way, it would be great to go on and do some stuff. But I've mentioned a couple of times that I have ADD, but one of the qualities of that is we find it extremely difficult to motivate ourselves to do anything that we're not profoundly interested in. Mm-hmm. Even if we think we should be doing it, even though we think like, oh, that would be beneficial for me. I find myself struggling with really motivating myself to do it because I'm like, don't feel that inspired personally. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if I'll ever do it.
Mm-hmm. We'll see. There's plenty of time.
Yeah.
Sure. Okay. Two final questions, if that's okay. I'll try and keep them short. One of them that I'd been itching to ask you was that something I see happen, especially often in people new to coin magic, is that this sort of fallacy. I don't know if it's ever referred to as this, but in my mind, I sometimes kind of think of it like this: is that the move is the effect, or at least you know somebody starts learning coin magic and they learn a sleight, and then they go out mm-hmm. and they perform the sleight, which almost seems kind of backwards. Like that's not really the point. And so, when I see your work, it's more like narrative and this beat and this drama. And do you have any insights on jumping from one to the other, process of time? Or
the best example for this is cinema. Mm. When you go to a movie, you go see like Avengers Endgame, you don't walk away going, I know how they did those special effects.
Right.
you know their special effects. You don't care. It was the story that drew you in, and the special effects made the story more magical. Mm-hmm. You know, and that is complete suspension of disbelief. And we did talk about not wanting complete suspension disbelief, but some disbelief brought to the playing field. But at the same time, the beauty in that is that it does meet you in that halfway point. And I think magic can be that, where the story is this beautiful thing that they can connect with on an emotional, personal level, which is something that's going to stick with them much longer if you can relate to them on that level. And the magic just amplifies that experience by it kind of like, okay, so if they have a rational thought about your story, right? But then you yank that rational mindset from underneath them, you pull the rug out from underneath them with the special effects. That gap moment allows them to experience that felt sensation of imagination, story, emotional connection with more intensity, because it's not clouded by their conceptual, rational perception.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a much more powerful experience for them.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it, yeah, they're both are important. I think you need really good method. I think slights need to be visual and powerful and natural looking. And I think you you need to put more focus on where does this connect? Because when you demonstrate moves, like you see so much in coin magic, mm-hmm. the guy like makes it disappear, reappears here, disappears, reappears. It's a flurry sequence, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which I don't think is coin magic. I think that's coin juggling. I don't think there's anything magical about that. Because if you're only showing a move, what are you expressing? You're just saying, hey, see if you can catch me,
mm-hmm.
right? Because how is the spectator supposed to relate to a move? It's just a move. They're going to go, oh, how do I figure that out? They're going to try to find some kind of relationship to it. And there's nowhere to go except for method, unless you give them a story. Now they have a way to relate that isn't immediately to this rationalizing of the method, which becomes a puzzle if that's the case, right? So these coin flurries, it's a puzzle more than it is magic.